Highball!
We are with Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon is both a second baseman and third baseman for the Rockies this season, and he's having an excellent season both at the plate and in the field. He was named the SIS Defensive Player of the Month for May, and he's among the Major League leaders in defensive runs saved and our good fielding plays stat. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. So first of all, we always ask players when we have them on to recall for us the first time that they made a really good defensive play as a kid.
I don't know. I played on a very competitive Little League team. My dad was the coach. The rumor is that we were turning double plays in Little League. So we had a pretty good squad, man. My dad worked hard to teach us baseball the right way. So, you know, probably something along those lines.
Would it have been a double play?
Yeah. And Little League, that's impressive. That's impressive, right?
All right. So then let's look at it from this angle. What were some of the things that you learned about playing defense as a kid that you were able to carry over all the way up to your career?
Man, honestly, I had some really good coaches. My dad being one of them, Craig Graybeck, who was a longtime big leaguer. Just kind of learning the fundamentals, man, and taking a lot of reps. They were big on defense. So it's been something that's been preached to me my whole life.
Okay. I watched a compilation of some of your best plays this season in terms of value, not necessarily in terms of like what they look like, the aesthetic. Yeah. And you've got bare hands, you've got backhands, you've got slow hit, you've got hard hit. We've got your running balls down in foul territory. We've got you coming in. We've got you going back. We've got you doing all sorts of things. Which ones have you worked on the most?
As far as third base goes, definitely the charging plays. Those are some of my favorite, running in, barehanding, throwing on the run, stuff like that. Second base, man, just kind of those rangy ones, right? Like taking the right angle, different things like that. Two completely different positions, but man, it's been fun to practice both.
All right. So what's the difference in approach when you're playing each?
Third base, I'm just kind of trying to react, be ready. Second base, I definitely lean with the pitch a little bit more, try to read some swings, you know, kind of see what I think is going to happen and try to be leaning one way or the other.
What does reading a swing entail?
You know, you just kind of see, you know, like kind of how their swing's coming off, different things like that. And then peek in, see what the pitcher's going to throw them. And, you know, hey, if your pitcher hits a spot, how's the ball going to kind of come off? What do you think? So, you know, I think it's just kind of something you just get used to after seeing a bunch of different swings, seeing how guys are attacking different pitchers. You can kind of get a feel for where the ball is going to come off the bat.
Is there a hitter that's particularly tricky to do that for?
Yeah, so really good hitters are definitely hard to read, right? Because they typically hit the ball all over the field. Typically, guys that you can lean on are guys who are, you know, heavy pull or heavy oppo guys.
Okay. At third base, you mentioned quick reactions. How do you go about working on that?
Honestly, man, I think the only way to work on it is just have somebody smash balls at you, right? I mean, that's the only way you're going to get game-like reps. So, you know, we have Vinny Castilla out here who can put some sauce on the ball, so we'll get out there during spring training and stuff like that and just let Vinny, or we have another guy, Warren Schaefer, who just whacks balls at us. So, you know, I think that's good practice.
Did you suffer any significant nicks or bruises from balls playing third base as you've been practicing it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You catch some off the shin, catch them off the hands. It's not fun, but it doesn't hurt too bad.
All right. So which approach to making a play, you mentioned the working, which you've worked on the most, which approach is your favorite?
As far as like third base or second base?
Yeah, either one. To in terms of making a play, what's your favorite kind of play to make?
I love hand up the middle at second base. Something about just running completely away from the bag, and you kind of feel cool when you turn and just spin and chuck it over to first. So I like playing up the middle, man.
Who were your favorite defensive players as you were growing up?
Honestly, man, I didn't watch too much on defense. Obviously, my generation, Derek Jeter is a favorite player for a lot of guys. Sean Green was my personal favorite. But defensively, man, I mean, I grew up in Southern California, so I got to watch David Eckstein and stuff like that. So, you know, solid guys on the field.
All right, I want to take Sean Green for a second because that's an interesting guy to take. That was a guy who I often felt the guy did hit four in a game, but I felt like he was a player who was better than his numbers indicated. And I'm curious why you gravitated to him.
Honestly, I liked his swing. We got a lot of Dodger games where I grew up. So I think when I first kind of started becoming like really interested in baseball was when he was hitting 30, 40 a year for the Dodgers. So,
and he's kind of the opposite, at least size wise, to Eckstein. And I'm curious what appealed to you about him.
Just watching the Angels and stuff like that. You know, I mean, he was the hard nosed player, played hard. You know, I think my dad kind of pushed me in that direction. My dad always wanted me to be, you know, a super hard player and stuff like that. So, you know, he's always like, hey, you watch that guy, you know, make sure you try to do what he does.
Okay. In terms of specific plays this season, I've marked down a few. You're personally responsible for holding down Francisco Lindor's batting average a little bit. You got a couple of nice plays against him. You seem to specialize in catchers, too. You have a ridiculous catch against Tucker Barnhart, another one against JT Realmuto. Do you have a favorite play from this year?
Favorite one from this year? I don't know if I have a specific favorite one, man. Honestly, I've just had a good time being out there with the boys, playing good defense. I think as a team, we're playing really good defense. So, you know, I think you kind of build off each other with that stuff, right? One of your buddies makes a good play. You're like, all right, man, like, let's do this thing. I'll make a good play too. So it's just been fun, man. It's been a fun year.
Let's take one of the plays. Maybe it's one of the ones that I mentioned, whether it's the Barnhart catch or the Realmuto catch or the Lindor plays that you've made. Can you kind of walk us through it in terms of everything that goes into it from pre-pitch all the way through to making the play?
Yeah, I'll walk you through the Lindor one because that's the fresh one in my mind. So we were in New York. We had shifted him a little bit. And kind of in the back of my head, I was like, hey, he might try to drop a bunt down, so don't give him too much space. I kind of gave him enough space where I knew, hey, I'm going to have to make a good play unless he makes a perfect bunt. So he went, dropped it down. I got lucky. He barreled it up a little bit, so it got to me a little bit quicker. Yeah, just I think from the get-go, I knew I was going to have to barehand it because he can run, and made the play.
Now, you're talking bare hands. We should note that as of the time of this taping, you lead the majors in successful bare hand plays. It's something that we track here at SIS that you might not know. So we had Tommy Edman on earlier this year, and he talked about what he learned from watching Nolan. And it was a little bit of behind the scenes into what makes Nolan really good. So I'm curious what you learned from watching Nolan, and I'll compare it to what he said.
Yeah, so I mean, as far as watching Nolan goes, man, I mean, he's one of the best, and he's one of the hardest workers day in, day out. He's taking his ground balls. He's uber focused, you know, but I think the thing that I learned from him was just kind of understanding how much time you have. He's really good at getting that guy on that last step. He always knows how much time he has. He doesn't rush plays unless he has to. So just kind of seeing him play with that and, you know, seeing how he attacks different balls, you know, he sets himself up really well if he's going to go bare hand or go glove. So he's one of the elite defenders, that's for sure.
You haven't mentioned Trevor Story yet. We haven't mentioned him yet. We had him on 2 years ago talking defense in the same kind of way. And he talked about a number of different things that he does. He talked about his pre-pitch prep, among other things. What have you learned from watching him?
Man, he's a pro. He's really similar to Nolan. Shows up every day, puts in his really good work. You know, and I just think, like you said, that pre-pitch preparation is huge. I think he does it better than anybody else that I know of.
Like, what does he do?
Peeks in at the pitch. He'll adjust like where he's standing. He'll read swings, different things like that. You know, things that a lot of good defenders do.
We're sometimes told that the Rockies don't use analytics as much as other teams. That's kind of the public perception of it. How does data impact how you play?
I think it's big. You know, we do use them for defense. We have, you know, kind of the percentage charts and stuff like that. And we'll go off that, but we're also not afraid to use our eyes. And I think that's a big thing that's kind of lost in this day and age. You know, hitters go through different stretches, right? Where they're hitting the ball at the middle, pulling the ball, different things like that. So, you know, I think using your eyes and knowing what your pitcher has and how he's going to try to attack them is huge in setting yourself up for success because, yeah, those numbers are good and it's probably going to end up like that. But, you know, if you can save an extra hit by using your eyes, that's also a big thing.
Is there a play that you can discuss that kind of puts that into perspective, like a play where data and your eyes both combine to allow you to make that play?
I don't know if there's a specific one that I can think of right now, but you know, I can give you an example, right? So say we're playing Manny Machado up the middle, got a guy who throws a really good slider and a good heater. You know, you could say like a John Gray, right? So, you know, he's going to kind of look to see that, try to see the pitch a little bit better. So he might be a little bit later on the heater. So maybe you shade over a little bit more into the hole or something like that instead of strong pulling him.
How self-aware are you of what you need to work on defensively?
I like to think I'm self-aware about that sort of thing. You know, I'm not afraid to take constructive criticism, that's for sure. But I also think that, you know, I kind of have a style and I kind of know what I do. And, you know, I want to stay within that and not, you know, branch out too much. You gotta stick to what you're good at, that's for sure.
What's your style?
Loose, leading with pitches. You know, I'm not afraid to be wrong. I'm not afraid to guess wrong on somebody and get beat the other way. I think that's also what makes me good. And you know, I'm not the fastest guy. So I think getting good jumps and getting good reads is important to me.
Can you tell us about your gloves? We like to give players the opportunity to plug the glove that they use, both, I guess, the one that you would use at second and the one that you would use at third.
So I use the same glove. I like how that glove feels. It's my baby. I've had it since high A. So what is that? 1, 2, 3. It's probably like 7 years old. It's really beat up, but I love it. And it's it's a big glove. I like a bigger glove, even at second base. You know, I feel like I've gotten used to it and comfortable with the transfer. So, yeah, I use the same glove everywhere.
Wow. Okay. When you were a kid, were you one of those kids? Because I remember I had a glove that was like three times the size of my hand, and it basically got me through all the way, you know, through from kindergarten to like junior high. Were you one of those kids that had a glove and just kept it forever?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So my grandfather on my dad's side got me a glove when I was like just born or something like that. It was a nice glove. I used that all the way through Little League. After Little League, I think I got a new glove, and I used that all the way to like my sophomore year of high school. And then I stole one of my buddy's gloves that I like junior year of high school through until I got my glove in high. So I used my gloves for a long time. That's
all right. What's the key to a good glove?
I think it's just personal preference, man. If you feel comfortable in where that pocket is and you can transfer that ball in and out, you know, I think it's all about comfort. I don't think there's one right way for anybody. I think it's just whatever you like.
All right. I have one hitting question for you we'll come back to defense. But before we do that, I have one hitting question. In spring training, you talked about getting your chase rate down, that was a goal for you this season for that to happen. I noticed that at least by the numbers, it's about the same. It's roughly the same. But I did notice that your results on breaking pitches are a lot better than they were last season. I'm curious if chase and avoiding the really bad chases on breaking pitches played a role in how you've gotten better against them.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, as far as chase goes, we don't want to chase. But, you know, I don't think you can go up there not trying to chase. I think you need to be aggressive. I think if you're trying to not miss the ball, you're going to miss pitches in the zone that you need to hit. So, you know, I think the biggest goal for me was shortening up my swing and not missing those pitches that I get to hit. So, I'm an aggressive hitter for sure. You know, hopefully as I see those sliders more and more, I start to lay off them. But yeah, it's more about shortening up your swing and not missing the ones that you need to hit for me.
What advice would you give to someone that's just starting to face breaking balls, trying to get used to hitting them?
Try to see them as long as you can, you know, and that's where the short swing comes in. You know, you gain more information, obviously, the longer you see the ball. So you're going to be able to lay off those nasty ones and hit those the hanging ones.
You mentioned Craig Graybeck before in terms of significant influences on you. What was a way that he particularly influenced you?
I think just kind of teaching me the game, man. I mean, it was a travel ball. We were like 12, 13, 14. He was teaching us to peek in at first base, you know, when you're running the bases, different things like that, bump plays. Like we were running crashes and different things like that. So I think just getting kind of like a big league level coach, you know, when you're 12, 13, 14, can really help some kids out.
So the secret to becoming a big leaguer is to get the glove when you're born, which you mentioned that your grandfather did.
Yep.
And then to get the coaching that gives you kind of those advanced little things, kind of tips that give you the little edge that you can take into high school and then beyond.
Yep. Anything to get an edge, man.
All right. How does Coors play into how you play defense?
I don't really notice anything different. We do have a bigger infield here. That's for sure. Kind of just a bigger field in general. I like to play deep, but I play deep everywhere. So I don't know if there's anything specific different that I do at Coors.
Okay. And our last question, if you go on Twitter, we can find instances in which your wife has messed with you a couple of times, whether it be with magic tricks or Simon Says or illusions or things of that sort. I'm curious if there's a defensive play that you've seen that most resembles a magic trick.
I don't know if I can think of one right off the top of my head, but that Javi Baez base running one, that was pretty magical, man. I don't know how he got out of that. I don't know how he ended up at second base. That's just kind of one of those ones you shake your head when you watch it.
Well, that's spotlighting bad defense. So let's spotlight good defense here. Who's the baseball player other than Javi Baez? We call him, you know, El Mago the magician. Who is the defensive player who would most resemble a magician?
Probably Nolan, man. I mean, he does some stuff, man. He pulls some plays out of nowhere, and you know, I think he's really good. Who else? Trevor Story can do some really impressive things. Obviously, I see that up close and personal.
What were the best ones that you saw from each of them?
Trevor's plays up the middle. I feel like he consistently makes these plays up the middle where he spins and the ball's already out of his hand before he's done turning. And then Nolan, dude, he does some crazy things on some backhands when he's running away from first base. The throws he makes, it's incredible.
All right, Ryan McMahon, Defensive Player of the Month for May. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so we thank Ryan McMahon, who was awesome. We're glad to get a chance to talk to the Defensive Player of the Month and the Defensive Run Saved leader heading into the day that we're taping, I mentioned in the interview that we would take what McMahon said about watching Nolan Arenado and reference it against what Tommy Edmonds said about Nolan Arenado, and pretty similar, slight difference in that Tommy Edmonds talked about throws from all over the place, which eventually Ryan got to. Tommy talked about throws from all over the place by Arenado and how he had incorporated that into his practice routine in terms of trying to improve himself defensively, working on throws from all different angles across the field. So that that ties up that bow. And we welcome in Justin Stein, producer, editor for the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast for all our podcasts here. Hey, Justin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark.
All right. So what we were going to do just to close out the show was we're going to do a little bit of analysis. We're going to take a look at the defensive run save leaderboard and just talk about some players who have been impactful or lacking impact in the first couple of months of the season. And I mentioned that Ryan McMahon, number one, tied for number one overall with Adam Duvall at the time that we taped this. 10 defensive runs saved this year, nearly an even split. 6 at second base, 4 at third base. Number of players right behind him, and we will get to those as we go here. All right, so we're going to start with teams. And the reason I wanted to do that was because I wanted to make a big point. The Tampa Bay Rays, who seem to do it every year, they seem to maximize the sum of their parts. They've done that again on the defensive side this season. They are the runaway leader in defensive runs saved right now with 48. The next closest team, just to give you a sense of that, are the Mets, surprise team, and the Padres with 32 defensive runs saved. Then the Astros, Rockies, Nationals, they round out the top five. The Mets are a surprise, a huge surprise, if you're struggling ad nauseum. The Nationals were last in the majors last year in defensive run save, so they're a huge surprise. The Rockies are a surprise because they lost Arenado. They still have Trevor Story, and as you'll hear, they got a couple other good players too. The Padres have been very good, but Tampa Bay always seems to find its way to the top. Teams at the bottom, the Angels, the Tigers, the A's, and the Phillies, those are all teams that are problematic defensively this season. Those are your top teams. Justin, what was your biggest takeaway from looking at the teams list?
Yeah, starting in that top group, you know, Rays, no surprise, obviously. When I saw the Mets at number two, I had to double take. And you, I'm sure you can speak to what they're doing this year probably more than I can as a Mets fan. But, man, 25th last season with a negative 16 DRS as a team, and they were negative 3 on shifts. And this year, 32 total and 14 in shifts. So it looks like shifting is probably the big reason for that.
Yeah, there have been articles written recently in both The Athletic and The New York Post about the improvements that the Mets have made in their defensive positioning. It also helps when you have a captain of the infield that is as slick and as solid as Francisco Lindor is. And though his offense has not been there, his defense has been pretty solid for the most part. The Mets also benefiting a little bit from the absence of their worst defensive player, J.D. Davis, who's been out for a while. They've had other solutions at third base. Jonathan Villar has filled in nicely there. The Nationals, the other surprise, as I mentioned, top 6. They were top 2 earlier this season. Things have gone very well for them. I remember I was a little nervous after they got Josh Bell in a trade, thinking that it was just going to be more of the same for Washington, but Robles, Turner, they have a number of good pieces there, and Washington's defense has been there, just the rest of the team for them has not. All right, we'll move to players now. So let's start with catcher. At the top of the leaderboard for defensive runs saved, it's Jacob Stallings of the Pirates. No surprise to us. I do think that some people are going to say, well, this is some new blood, but not really. No surprise to us. Justin, who was impactful to you? Who's been impactful to you at catcher so far, or not impactful?
Yeah, I think two guys kind of jumped out to me when I looked at the list. The first was Roberto Perez, who's kind of, he's our kind of DRS guy at catcher. He had 6 last year, which was third most. He's currently at 0 for 2021. So when I pulled up the list, expected to see him and Stallings and guys like that at the top. When I had to scroll down to find where Roberto was, I was a little shocked. Definitely not surprised by Stallings being at the top. And then the guys right behind him, Christian Vasquez and Austin Hedges, are kind of more usual suspects at the top. So that list is, you know, outside of Roberto Perez, is pretty much expected.
Yeah, there are some high reputation players there. We talked to Perez previously. He was a fun interview. He's still very strong, I'm sure, on the no robot ump bandwagon. Moving over to first base. So this is another trend within this. We mentioned McMahon, two positions where he's excelled. Max Muncy is living off of a similar formula. He leads first baseman, Dodger first baseman, leads first baseman with 5 defensive runs saved this season. He has 9 total, and he's a guy that can play all over the field. I like to use him at second base. He's been very impressive so far. Your thoughts on first base and any players of note there?
The thing that surprises me about Muncy isn't the versatility or that he's a good defender, but he had a -2 DRS last year at first base specifically. So the fact that he leads the group this year with 5 was a little surprising. The other thing that surprised me about this position is Miguel Sano currently has 1 DRS. He's kind of certainly not known for his defense. He had -5 last year. So it looks like he's added a little bit to his game on that front.
First base can be fickle. We've been surprised this year that Matt Olson not up near the top, but the A's as a whole have not been up to snuff. Second base, shifting over, we mentioned Ryan McMahon with the 6 defensive run save. There's like a bazillion guys that have 5. I know we've talked to and about Tommy Edman, a number of other players that you want to focus on. I'm guessing you want to focus on Tommy Edman here. We both like him a lot.
Yeah, definite friend of the show, Tommy Edman, and watched a lot of Cardinal games this year, watched a lot of his defense, and when I saw he was at 3 DRS, I actually expected that number to be higher. He's been really, really good from an eye test standpoint. No, not that the 3 DRS is certainly not bad by any means, but I kind of thought he would be a little bit higher in that group.
Justin Stein works in our operations department, which means he helps manage the video scouts that do all the baseball tracking for us, that track every play of every game, every pitch of every game. So he's certainly seen a lot of baseball. One funny note about Edman and his 3, Max Muncy has more defensive runs at second base than Tommy Edman does. How about that?
Definitely wouldn't have expected that, for sure.
All right, let's slide over to third base. Now, third base is interesting again. New blood here. Number one's not Chapman. Number one's not Arenado. Number one right now is Colorado Rockies third baseman Josh Fuentes, who leads with 7 defensive runs saved. What's amazing about that is last year he played like 200 innings at first base. That's like 25, 30 games. And he led all first basemen in defensive runs saved last season. So he switches over back to his natural position. Josh Fuentes at the hot corner. He's someone for whom the minor league defensive run save numbers were strong. There was some kind of, I guess you would say, foreshadowing for him coming into his major league career, and he's living it up to it this year. Your thoughts on the other third baseman?
Fuentes was very interesting at the top of that list, first of all. And I think not so much because we didn't think he was a good defender, but it's funny that he replaces Arenado at third for the Rockies. And certainly there's been no drop off defensively at all, despite what people might have thought heading into the season. This is actually a really interesting position, third base overall. Right behind Fuentes, guys like Eric Gonzalez and Matt Chapman. So kind of guys that you would expect to be there. I think Chapman's really pushed a little bit lately in looking at this list in the past. He's starting to get back up to where we expect him to. But I think the biggest surprise from a positive standpoint for me is Asdrubal Cabrera with 5 DRS is next on the list. He had 0 in 2020, and he's certainly not a guy you think of when you think of defensive infielders.
Yes, so I believe that the stat on Asdrubal Cabrera is that he hasn't had a positive defensive run save number at a position in like a bazillion years. And we're talking like 2008, like the earliest parts of his career. He has never been viewed as a positive value defensive player, but I think I know why. And I picked up on it when I watched the Diamondbacks play the Giants. And when I watched more so when I watched the Diamondbacks play the Mets, he's very sure-handed. Like if he gets to the ball, he's going to make an out. He's going to make the play. He'll complete the play. The issue that he has and has had in years past is that he's not nimble. He doesn't necessarily get to balls. So as a result, his DRS is low. Now in the age of, you know, amazing positioning, Cabrera is put in spots where he can make plays. And all he has to do is get to the ball. And if he gets to the ball, he's going to be fine. And he accumulates by getting to the ball. That's how he's at 5, which I was scratching my head about that one as well. Also a shout out to Santiago Espinal, who has been very good for the Blue Jays. at third base. All right, shortstop. J.P. Crawford, Gold Glove winner in the AL last year. Not a Fielding Bible Award winner yet, though. 8 defensive runs saved to lead the way. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa made the conversion from third base to shortstop for the Rangers. He's next with 6. Your observations on shortstop, and I think you're going to go with a cardinal twist here, right?
Yeah, definite cardinal twist here. First of all, you know, Crawford and Kiner-Falefa, those may not be the most household names across the league, but I don't think anybody here at SIS is super surprised that those guys are near the top of the DRS list. But I think Edmundo Sosa for the Cardinals has kind of taken over a lion's share of the shortstop job for the Cardinals while Paul DeJong's been out. But he's currently at 5 DRS, which was a little surprise. But also, when you add in the innings played by DeJong and Tommy Edman at short, St. Louis shortstops have combined for 8 DRS total. So I thought that was interesting that they're getting a lot of good play out of, you know, one of the most important positions on the field. And again, for people who are familiar with DRS, be no surprise that the Cardinals are, you know, solid at that position and kind of solid overall after leading the league last year in that category.
One of the things that has happened this year in the move from third base to shortstop is that Eugenio Suarez has played what you probably thought he would play. He struggled at short after struggling. I wouldn't say necessarily struggling too bad at third base, but his numbers at shortstop have not been great. There's a learning curve. Anytime you do that, Kiner-Falefa has handled it. Eugenio Suarez, not quite, but Kiner-Falefa is just a great athlete. Left field. So this was kind of cool. When I was talking to some folks on the Tampa Bay Rays broadcast crew, we were trying to figure out why the Rays are so much so strong defensively this year. And Randy Arozarena, of all people, leads left fielders with 9 defensive runs saved. And what I've noticed about him is that, like, he can make the difficult catch. And there have been a number of those difficult-looking catches this season where he has finished the play and made a really nice play this year, which has allowed him to rack up some defensive runs saved. Austin Hayes of the Orioles is 2nd. He had a home run robbery, which boosted his number a little bit. I watched him. He's kind of a combination glove arm guy. Left field's tricky because you typically don't put your best guys in left field. That's kind of the slot where you stick in the, you know, the third best of your guys. But he's looked pretty good. He's played center before too, so I think he's got a good rep. I'm going to ask that you not go the Cardinals route, even though we're going to neglect to mention Fielding Bible Award winner Tyler O'Neill, who has 2 defensive runs saved. I'm going to ask you to go another route for left field.
First, when I looked at this list initially and saw Arozarena and Hayes at the top, I was a little surprised. Arozarena, after the run he had last year offensively in the postseason, defense wasn't, that's not the first thing that I thought of when I heard his name, but, you know, 9 runs saved already is, that's quite a number. And I actually, I scouted the Rays game last night, and he threw Josh Bell out from left field on an absolute cannon. So after I had done the research on this yesterday and saw that last night, I was like, oh yeah, okay, that, I guess that makes sense.
All right, so between Arozarena, Fuentes, McMahon, so as I said, some new blood out there. Center field, top of the list right now. He's been top of the list for most of the season. Michael Taylor of the Kansas City Royals, we talked to him earlier this year, leading the way with 7 defensive runs saved. Even with an injury, Byron Buxton 2nd, which is amazing how he always finds his way up near the top of the list when even went in years where he doesn't necessarily get a lot of playing time. Harrison Bader, 5 defensive runs saved. No Kiermaier on this list, which surprised me a little bit. A number of players here, center field's like the sexy position. Everyone gets pretty excited over it. Buxton, Kiermaier, Jackie Bradley Jr., but Michael Taylor leading the way. What do you got here?
Yeah, this was another really fascinating position when I looked at it. So like you said, some of the usual suspects at the top of the list and some usual suspects missing from the top of the list. I thought that, you know, like you said, Taylor's been at the top all year. Buxton and Bader both had some injury issues, so they're under 200 innings while Taylor's over 400. You know, Kiermaier not being on that list was interesting. I think something that really jumped out at me is Odubel Herrera from the Phillies is currently at 6 DRS, which has him tied for 2nd. And he is certainly not a guy who's been known for his defense. He didn't play in 2020, but he had minus 6 DRS in 2018, minus 3 in 2019. So him being at 6 right now is pretty fascinating. And then the other big surprise for me was Ketel Marte, currently at minus 7 DRS, which is last in the league. And the last time he played significant innings at the position was in 2019, and he finished with four DRS in just under 700 innings that season. So a couple big surprises there for me.
Yeah, he's normally usually stellar in center or at second base, depending on where the Diamondbacks choose to put him. Another guy that is at the bottom is going to be who I'm going to ask you to talk about when we get to right field, which is right now. Adam Duvall leading the way with 8 defensive runs saved. We named him our April Defensive Player of the Month. His DRS split is almost even between his arm, because he's got a lot of assists, and his glove, because he can get to balls. He can chase balls down the line. He can chase balls hit to the deepest part of the ballpark. As I mentioned before, tied for the overall lead with 10 defensive runs saved. Kyle Tucker of the Astros, I have to say, I watched him a little bit. He looks the part in right field for Houston. 7 defensive runs saved right on Duvall's heels. Manuel Margot has been very good this year in all 3 spots for Tampa Bay. 5 defensive runs saved in right field. But the guy I want you to focus on is a guy who has been up and down and up and down in right field defensively in the time that he's been in the major leagues, Bryce Harper.
Yeah, when I was looking at this list and didn't see Harper there on the top, you know, it wasn't too much of a surprise. But, you know, what was really surprising when I dug into it is Bryce had 11 DRS in 2019, like you said, you know, minus 1 last year, and he's at minus 5 currently this season. So he really has, it's been kind of a roller coaster defensively for him. He's had some really bad years and some really good years. I know in the past he's done really well in some of our metrics when it comes to like making the most sliding and diving catches.
Yep.
It doesn't look like that's the case this year. So maybe some of that is why his numbers pulled back a little bit. But yeah, seeing him that, I didn't necessarily expect him to be that low on the list, even though I know it has fluctuated a lot over the last several years.
I want to make one point on him. In 2019, so video scouts and ops people like Justin, when they watch a game, one thing they track is what we call good fielding plays. Good fielding plays are like your web jams, your great catches, your really good throws, cutting off a ball in the gap to prevent a guy from taking an extra base. We have about 30 categories of good fielding plays. In 2019, Bryce Harper had 22 good fielding plays. Those are your, as you were talking before, your slides, dives, and jumps. In order for his defensive run save total to be good, I think he has to make those plays. Because if he's not making those plays, those balls are falling in and he's taking the penalty for them. In 2020, the shortened season, he had 4 good fielding plays. He was on a pace for 13 or 14. So a dip of about 7 or 8. From 2019. And this year, only 3 good fielding plays so far in 41 games in right field. He's had injuries. It's problematic. And when you're putting that much money into a player, you need him to be good both offensively and defensively. Bryce Harper is a fantastic player. His defensive run save total this season is not up to the level that it was 2 years ago. -5 this year in right field for Bryce Harper. So to close out individual players, we look at pitchers. Can do this quick. Dallas Keuchel leads with 6 defensive runs saved. That's not new blood. That's very, very, very old blood. And I love watching him. I like watching Stroman. I like watching Greinke because they are like cats on the mound. He's great. Dallas Keuchel leading the way. A couple of guys at the bottom that you were caught off guard by.
Like you said, at the top of the list, no big surprises there. But I looked to see who was at the bottom of the list and maybe expected some, you know, some older pitchers, some guys who, you know, slowed down a little bit. But the 2 guys at the bottom of the list were Brady Singer of the Royals and Justin Dunn of the Mariners. Singer at -4 and Dunn at -3. You know, both of those guys are young guys, decent athletes. So I was really surprised to see those guys at the bottom of the list. Not that they're known as fabulous defenders or anything, but just those weren't the names I expected.
Thank you, Justin. And this wraps up the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast for today. I want to thank Ryan McMahon and Justin Stein for helping us along. For Justin Stein and Ryan McMahon, thank you for listening to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the SIS Baseball Podcast. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any questions, email the show at mark@sportsinfosolutions.com or tweet us at sportsinfo_SIS.